97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, let's get going here for a bit of a cloudy Wednesday in St. Louis. Good afternoon, Sue Thomas. How are you?
I am fine. Thank you so much. A little cooler today. Better walk at Forest Park.
You know what? It was just a little cooler because there was not as much sunshine, right?
Exactly.
By the way, I have a great history of the Louis Sue idea for
you.
Oh,
what?
I'm not going to share it right now. I'll share it a little bit later this afternoon. Okay.
You know what? I'll stay tuned.
Okay, you will stay
tuned. All
right. Hello, Fred. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Man, it was rainy this morning.
I must have missed a lot of that. When you came in, you mean it was rainy?
No, like around 6 a.m.
Oh, that makes sense. See, I'm still sleeping soundly at 6 a.m. But that was one of the reasons that they...
Sorry.
One of the reasons that they delayed everything at the BMW Pro-Am today out at Belle Reve Country Club. So it's funny because I knew... I get the media emails and I have a credential to go out there, right? And I knew that I wanted to go out this morning because the Pro-Am, Ozzy's going to play in it. And I wasn't sure they really announced some of the stuff until last night. But Dan Reardon, our golf correspondent, who is also out there, no relation, said, you better get here because Eric Schmidt is paired with Scottie Scheffler. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't miss that. So I jump in the shower and I head there and he teed off on one. So what was happening is the pros were playing only nine holes. Eric ended up playing 18, but he played with Scottie Scheffler in the first nine. I caught up with him on the eighth hole. I knew where he was, so I'm like hustling to get over to the eighth hole where they were going to finish, and then I wanted to see number nine tee box. So did you put both pieces of audio in here or just the one that where I interviewed him?
Hang on. He said just the one so far.
Well, because I have – where is that, by the way? I don't even see it here. Oh, there it is. So I – what happened was, and you'll hear, I think you'll hear the answer here, is when he hit his third shot on eight, it went over the green toward the spectators, actually toward where I was, right? And it didn't come that close, but I wanted to make it seem a little bit more theatrical. So when he came up to to get to his shot, I said, Schmidt, I said, you almost killed some of the spectators here. What are you doing? And then he realized it was me, and he started laughing. And he goes, you know, I've already been on SportsCenter one time. So I stopped recording, and he had a putt. Actually, I think it was a chip. He might have used his putter off the green. And he gets within 2 feet of the cup. I mean, it was a great recovery shot. He's a good golfer. And here, I had a little conversation with him before he hit the back nine.
How much fun was that, first of all?
I mean, it was a thrill of a lifetime. He's the greatest golfer in the world,
wow,
right? And to get to spend a couple hours playing golf with him was just fantastic. So, incredible golfer, great human being, and it was a lot of fun. I had my wife and my youngest daughter with me, too, so it's a pretty special day.
So had you played with him before? Because you played with Bryson, you played with the president. Had you played with Scottie?
No, I hadn't.
Okay.
And I didn't know until yesterday they did the draws last night of
who
I was going to play with, so I was ecstatic to be able to play with Scottie.
And how'd you do here?
I played pretty well, okay. I think. I mean, I think he did better, that's fair to say, but I played pretty well.
A little errant shot. I was watching you on eight, a little errant shot. You almost hit the crowd.
Well,
I was concerned
heckler,
about that.
There was a heckler on the other side.
That was me.
That was really obnoxious.
But your
I recognized him before.
But your putt was beautiful, right?
It's kind of like life. You just kind of have to stick with it, right? So
now you struggled on nine, didn't you?
That's fake news.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. And one more question. When they introduced you on the tee box, they had to have said, here's the official former state senator of the Mark Reardon Show, right? Okay, good.
You scripted that, right?
Thank you. Yes, all right, see you, man. Right, take care, Eric.
And then as I was actually walking out of the golf course a couple hours ago, and he continued, even though Scottie didn't continue. And I think he might have been playing with Adam Scott, but I got a chance to talk to him and his wife Jamie was there. They were having a great time. He is a really good golfer, and he did struggle a little on nine. He didn't want to admit that. That wasn't fake news. Tee shot went into the rough, and then he ended up – I think he did maybe still parred the hole, but he really is a good golfer. And something tells me – like, I don't know who makes the decision at the PGA, who's doing the amateur stuff, because you don't want to pair someone who can't hit the ball. And I saw people out there today that were not – you know, the greatest golfers, although it happens in golf. You hit a bad tee shot and then you recover. So I was watching, and Ethan knows this, because I was trying to grab Matthew Tkachuk, and he was on the course. So I was watching him on 17, and then he comes to 18 tee box, And he, it's funny because even some of these pros, you know, you watch him. I was watching Tom Kim. I think Tom was out with that group. And they sit over the ball quite a bit. They look behind their ball. They're shaping their shot in their head, right? And then they don't just get up there and whack the ball like a lot of amateurs. They focus a little bit. So Matthew Tkachuk, I mean, no sooner does he put his ball into or his tee into the ground and his ball on the tee, he just freaking gets up there and smacks it. And he just hit it. So he went on 18, he went to the rough. And I went up to watch him hit his shot because I was right, you know, right behind him, and I got some good video. He's buried into the grass and the mud. There was mud on his ball. Oof. And he muscled this shot out of the rough onto the green. It was incredible because, look, hitting out of a rough like they have right now at Belrive for an amateur golfer, the average golfer, even the person who's watching it, you don't really have an appreciation for how hard those shots are. Now, let me give you an example. If Ethan and I were playing that shot, we'd take our ball out of the mud and we'd cheat and we'd put it up on the grass and we'd hit it a lot better because that's what most amateurs do. But he muscled it out and he, you know, he doesn't have, a lot of these guys don't have the prettiest swings, but when you have hand-eye like Matthew Tkachuk, you do pretty well. So what happens, Sue, is that as they, you know, go between holes, and Matthew was, I think, wrapping up his round at that point, they sign autographs. Like, today was a big day for autographs with the kids, and they take pictures, and everyone would seem very generous after the round, not necessarily during the round. But Matthew, I tried to grab him and ask him a couple of questions, and he was in a bit of a hurry. So I got to say hi to him, but I did not get to interview him. But really, a great, you know, second day. And I think the good news is, and Fred, we have Dave Murray coming up a little bit later, right?
Right, 4 o'clock.
The good news is if you look at this weather, it's going to be phenomenal. Now, Sue, you had some breaking news. I said yesterday, man, your brother should really be here because Jeff's a really good golfer. I've played with him before, and he's calling an audible, right?
He is. Well, yeah, he had to be at home because his mother-in-law passed away, and they've had one service.
Oh.
And then there's another one coming up, and that's why he thought he couldn't do it. And he said that it's a little bit of downtime in between.
Okay.
Maybe I could make it in, Sue, for the...
So he's coming in and taking me, so we're going to both go Saturday.
That's amazing.
It is so good.
I will see you out there for sure. Look, my plan...
I'm so excited.
My plan is to go every day, because...
Why not? You've got the great stuff
here. I know.
Here.
I've got great credential, and I've got great parking, and... it's going to be a lot of fun. Dan Reardon, by the way, we had a little bit of an agreement after the ninth hole because Dan was on one side of the rope. I was on the complete other side. I'm like, hey, if you get Schmidt, make sure he knows I'm over here. And Dan's like, yeah, same deal. Now, I think Dan was going to send his audio too. Can you make sure by the end of the show I have that? Because we'll play that a little bit later as well. All right, politically, we had some races down in Florida that were settled. It's interesting because there was a DSA candidate that ended up winning. Fred, that was for the Senate seat, right?
Yeah, Angie Nixon.
Right. So that's going to create some opportunities for Republicans. Byron Donalds, congressman, won the nomination for Republican governor. He's the one that's going to face David Jolly, right? David Jolly used to be a Republican. He switched to be a Democrat, but he's not, you know, he's not completely out of whack and you know, completely radical. So that, you know, might make things a little bit closer for Byron Donalds. And then we're going to ask Scott Jennings this question here in a few minutes. Jennings is going to join us. But you have a situation where certainly Florida's pretty red, right? But, you know, the other thing that's happening right now, and I'll ask Scott about this, is, Fred, we were talking about this earlier. They've moved. There's a bunch of different ratings firms out there politically. What's one of them that I should think of? Moody might be one of them. Anyway, they rate the races on a map. So in other words, they would say, I'll use Michigan as an example, El Sayed against Mike Rogers. It would probably be leaning R at this point, right? They would do likely R if it looks pretty much like a lockup, right? So in Missouri, they would probably do likely R. Well, down in Texas, Tallarico has moved from likely R. Well, he's the Democrat. So I guess you would say the seat overall has moved from likely R to leans R. So that's a little, that's showing that the polling that didn't really work here a couple of weeks ago in Michigan or Wisconsin is showing that race might be a little tighter, you know, than people really want it to be. The other thing is this John Ossoff comment about, you know, this woman who travels with President Trump that has involved the administration. And he makes this allegation like they're doing something salacious together. I mean, it's just completely outrageous what he said. And of course, there's Democrats that are defending this, which is quite incredible. Kat Rosenfield is going to join us from the Free Press at 3:30. I love Kat. And she's written, you know, I'm kind of fascinated by this Lindsey Clancy murder trial. And this is the woman, we talked about this yesterday. She killed her three children. She is presenting, and her lawyers are presenting an insanity defense. And there might be something to that when you hear the testimony. Like I said, we'll get Dave Murray on for an update on the BMW Championship and his forecast for the weekend, which looks spectacular. Whether you're going out to Belle Reve or not, you're going to have a great end of summer weekend, I think, weather-wise here in St. Louis. So that's going to be perfect. This is where I think you might get a history of the Lewis Sioux, okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you that I poached a little here today. I don't like doing that. But there was a guest that was waiting to go on Dave Glover's show. And I just started talking to them. This guy's name is Jim Epstein. His nephew was there, too. And they have this company called Clearly Better Sense. And they're actually literally scenting the merch tent at Belle Reve. Well, because research shows, and this makes sense, like, let's offer a real-life example. If you walk outside of our building or in, you're going to smell dumpsters that smell like there's three or four dead bodies in them right now. I mean, it was worse last week with the humidity. So what these guys, that's an extreme example. But what they do is they have diffusers and other things that provide scents, like, to the Four Seasons.
Yes.
And this is a local guy.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, I didn't either. So he's agreed to come and speak with us in the 4 o'clock hour, right around 4:45 this afternoon. And I'm going to tell you, I think you're going to find this is an interesting company.
Love it.
They go a lot deeper into scents and with products and brands than I ever expected. I literally run into them in the hall. And my apologies to Dave, because I don't like to poach guests, but Jim was so good. And they have him first, so I don't think that'll be a problem. But that's coming up. And we'll get an update in the 5 o'clock hour on all the politics and stuff with our friend Dwayne Patterson. Curtis Hauck is going to be here tonight. And then wrapping things up with Dan out at Belle Reve and his thoughts on the start of the tournament tomorrow morning. So we're off and running here this afternoon. The other thing, Ethan, should we mention the video component? Should we dial the audience into what we're going to try here today, even though it's a bit of an experiment?
Yeah, sure. Why not? We're going to be having on some of our guests, specifically in the 5 o'clock hour, that are going to be joining via video. So if you dial in or tune in via the YouTube or X on 97.1 FM Talks pages, you're going to be able to see Dwayne Patterson, Curtis Hauck joining in via the video, and this is something that we're hoping to do a little bit more of.
I haven't even seen some of these guys in person, right? It was funny. Last week was fun because Dwayne was sharing, we had no idea. We fall into this with Fred a lot, as I said, but Dwayne was sharing his, what do you say, like 47 years of umpiring?
47, yeah.
That's crazy.
And he said he was known for basically not wearing the same color twice behind the plate, too. So it'll be fun to talk with him. He's one of my favorite political pundits, and we're off and running here on a Wednesday. Like I said, we got audio cut of the day. I will not be here on Thursday and Friday enjoying the tournament, but back all week next week. So we're coming back with Scott Jennings next on 97.1 FM Talk. I mentioned we're going to have more on the Lindsey Clancy murder trial coming up here with Kat Rosenfeld from the Free Press. That's at 3:30. Dave Murray with the weekend forecast and an update on the BMW Championship coming up at 4:04. We got Sue's News. Oh, our friend Alex Rich is going to swing by here this afternoon as well. And his wife is ready to pop, Sue, as they say.
Ah.
And he's very, very pregnant. The due date is technically September 12th, and they didn't want to say September 11th because that still has a stigma, but he's getting very close to having, I don't know that he recognizes how dramatically life will change here in the next 2 weeks. But
that's exciting.
When you're a young man like Alex, you got to be up for the challenge, right?
I think he is.
Oh, I think he is too. 97.1 Talk political insider Scott Jennings back with us this afternoon. Of course, you hear his show 8 p.m. here on the station. Jennings, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great in your nation's capital, but in transit to New York City. We'll be on CNN tonight at 10 Eastern, 9 Central on the big debating show with Abby. We'll see what the night's news has in store for us.
Okay, let me start with this John Ossoff story, because this is kind of nuts. Let me play the audio in question here where he takes a shot at just someone who is close to the president, works in the administration, and really, this is over the top and outrageous.
See, he doesn't want to do the job. He wants to build his ballroom and travel with Natalie on their apparently defenseless flying palace gifted by the Emir of Qatar.
All right, so what do you think of that? That's way out of bounds, isn't it?
Of course it is. It's a Democrat U.S. senator who wants to be president and believes that the way to do that is to punch down on previously unknown White House aide. She's not a public figure. Nobody knows who Natalie Harp is. And he goes out there and drags her name through the mud and heavily implies that the only reason she works there is because she's a concubine for some politician. And that's what he thinks Democrats need to hear in order to make you president. That's how sick their party is.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, that one clearly stepped over the line. I don't know how much of the rest of the media is criticizing what he did there. But let's kind of go to
nobody,
Florida.
Nobody.
That figures rhetorical,
Mark, that's
right?
I sat on CNN last night, and I've watched all the coverage. I'm apparently the only person who's willing to defend her honor, and it is disgusting and sickening. She does not deserve this. And if I walked out there with a list of all of John Ossoff's female employees and read their names and said, whoa, I see them hanging around. Wonder how they got hired. Wink, wink. Do you know they would go crazy?
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not going to do that. But that's what he's doing to her. And, you know, if you're a woman of any political ideology out there, understand this is what John Ossoff thinks of you. You only work in politics for one reason. That's what he thinks you're good for. That's the party of women, Mark. That's what they're up to today.
Did you have people on the panel that were defending that in some way, shape, or form?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes,
okay.
I did.
I
missed
that.
I did. Oh, yes. I've seen it two days in a row now. We've seen people defending this. It's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right. Well, keep up the good fight on that one. I didn't realize that one had kind of unwound the way that it had. All right. What's your takeaways from Florida? Byron Donalds, obviously, I think he was expected to be the GOP nominee. Ron DeSantis is not able to run again. But you have a DSA socialist candidate, Angie Nixon, that won for the Senate nomination, right?
Yes. I can't imagine a state worse for socialists than Florida. I mean, Florida is full of people from Cuba and Venezuela and other countries. And, you know, they all came here to flee socialism and communism. And so now the Democrats are telling them, well, hey, maybe we ought to try socialism here. I think Floridians are well aware and well acquainted with how bad socialism is. There's a bunch of people that live there who tried to get away from it. I think Ashley Moody is going to be fine. I think Byron Donalds is going to be the next governor. I think, once again, Florida is kind of a model for Republicans. It's been well governed. And it's going to be a bright line debate between people who love America and people who love socialism. I'm glad we're going to have it.
Do you have any, newer thoughts on Texas right now? I see some, people moving Texas into the leans Republican instead of likely Republican. I have a hard time believing Tallarico is going to, put enough dent into Ken Paxton to win that race. But are you sensing anything differently at this point or not?
I think it's a close race. I think Paxton will win. I would also caution people that summer polling in Senate races almost always, that's going to be in every state. I saw Flan Insights did a little analysis on this today, and you get a lot of overestimation on Democrats in summer Senate polling. That having been said, not going to lie, Paxton's got some baggage. It's going to have to be fought out, and it's going to be expensive. But I ultimately think Texas will stick for the Republicans.
I would hope so. And then you go to El Sayed in Michigan, and you would also hope that Mike Rogers should not have a hard time, convincing people that the guy who hates football. I like some ads running on a Saturday here in a couple of weeks when Michigan State and Michigan are playing for Mike Rogers. I think those might be pretty effective.
I think so, too. I think El Sayed has taken every woke, weird, crazy position you can take, and you combine that with his affinity for defending terrorism. And I mean, remember back in the spring when the Ayatollah died in Iran, they had a conference call on his campaign, and he said, well, I don't really want to comment on this. I don't want to offend any of my supporters. I mean, that literally happened. They had to make a campaign decision not to comment on the Ayatollah because it would offend their supporters. That's what you're up against in Michigan, literal terrorist butcher sympathizers. And by the way, they've made it unsafe even for the Democrat Attorney General of Michigan. She's Jewish. She can't even go to the Democrat Party convention because she says she fears for her safety. Well, who's at the convention? It's El Sayed supporters. They're violent, they're socialist, they're terrorist sympathizers, they're anti-American radicals, and if we don't elect Mike Rogers up there, we got a problem.
I would say so, and I don't think I spoke to you since last week with Francesca Hong in Wisconsin. Gosh, I was rooting for her so much because that would have been quite the double whammy in those states for Republicans to take advantage of. But look, the bottom line here is the economy. And if you look at some of the polling, which was certainly off in that race and others, people are still worried about affordability. And I think that the Republicans need to make sure that they're pivoting to a message that's just not anti-DSA, that's positive. Hey, we're helping you here in America.
There's a lot of high-level Republicans who agree with you. It's not enough just to call them socialists. You have to say, yes, they're socialists. Here's what we've done, and here's what the difference in our policies would be. You have to have a real conversation because people are having real difficulty. Affordability is an issue. I went over to a barbecue place in Louisville the other day, and it was like a sandwich and a drink was like $15. I mean, people have real issues and concerns about affordability. It must be acknowledged, but you also have to say, here's what we've done. We've cut your taxes. We brought down the rate of inflation. They want to raise your taxes. They want to get government more involved. I mean, there's a debate to be had here. And oh, by the way, we're not the ones who drove up inflation in the first place. It happened under Biden. We're the ones trying to control it. They're the ones trying to raise your taxes and make it worse. I think the debate can be had, but you can't be lazy. You have to have it. You can't just say socialism bad. I mean, it
I agree, but
there's more to it.
Yeah, we're on the same page on that. Have you guys, and apologize for me not knowing this, but have you gotten into the WNBA stuff with Sophie Cunningham and the, you know, the ridiculous?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, dude. Like, you have an owner of a team that goes up and makes a girl cry, and then you have someone after hard fall on Sophie who says white supremacy, right? Now, white privilege. I'm sorry, white privilege. That comment there should get attention in the media, just claiming white privilege. But no one wants to even touch that. I mean, the sports media, they're way left than they ever should be. And I don't understand that. I never really have.
I did a story on the show today, which will be on the air tonight, about the WNBA fans that wore the XX, XY
yes.
shirts, and the
yeah.
security guard made them cover up. Why is everybody in the WNBA, from the owners down to the security guards, dedicated to the proposition of having men play in the WNBA?
It's unreal.
It's the Women's Basketball League. I don't understand, but it's like they've all been told, we have to get men in here. I mean, that would be one way to solve their profitability issues, I guess. But the league is for women, and they're all dedicated to getting men in there. I don't get it.
It's unbelievable. It really is. But good for Sophie Cunningham, because she's been heroic. Were you guys at the game last night? I knew you were there in Cincinnati a couple of nights ago. Did you and Joe go last night?
No, didn't make it. I followed it, though. I was doing CNN election coverage last night.
Yeah.
Glad to see Leahy, man. What a workhorse. Really a great pitcher. And to beat the Reds in Cincinnati is great. I saw the wrong half of the doubleheader the other night. Joe saw both games. I saw the bad half, but I got to take a couple of the boys. And I have to give a shout-out to the left fielder for the Reds, J.J. Blade, who in the ninth inning, after asking for nine innings, he tossed a ball up into the stands to my little boy, Harlan,
awesome.
Who had his glove. And he was like, for nine innings, trying to get a ball, and finally Blade. So, and we had been watching him play at AAA in Louisville, so he knew
cool.
J.J. Blade. Anyway, great memory, and it was a great time, and always fun to see the Redbirds.
Yeah, that second game was a tough loss just because, you know, it slipped away. But then again, as they say, it's tough to win a doubleheader. All right, Jennings, thank you so much. I was out on the golf course here at Belrive Country Club. Our friend Eric Schmidt got to play with Scottie Scheffler this morning. How about that?
Can Schmidt golf? Is he good?
He's good. No, he is good. He's played with Bryson. Yes, he's excellent. He really is a good golfer. I think that's one of the reasons they paired him with Scotty, because they knew that he wouldn't, you know, be embarrassing. But he's an excellent golfer. Don't tell him I said that, though. Tell him I said something different,
man,
okay?
Schmidt's a great baseball player and a great golfer and a great senator. The guy's got it all. I love it.
And, you know, his humble beginnings started right here on the Mark Reardon Show as the official state senator, just so you know. I launched careers, Jennings. You know that.
The show that launched 1,000 careers, the Mark Reardon Show. I love it.
Have a great week. We'll talk soon. See ya.
See ya, Mark.
You know, I've admitted this before. I shamefully, because we indulge in some reality TV shows, watch this show, The Traitors, which is just so bad. They're having a new version of it come out in the fall. But Lisa Rinna was on The Traitors. You know who Lisa Rinna is?
Harry
Hamlin, right? Yeah,
yes.
The Lips, right. She's just legit crazy. Here's what she said about the Lindsay Clancy case.
Patrick did it. Patrick's the one who did it. Not Lindsay. I was actually in therapy today, and my therapist and I were talking about it, and she looks at me and she goes, he did it. I was like, wow, yeah.
Yeah, because he didn't do it. I mean, if there's one thing we know here is that Lindsay Clancy actually murdered her children. Now, whether or not there is an insanity defense or not, that's what the jury's going to decide. Kat Rosenfield is back with us. A columnist at the Free Press has written about this. Hello, Kat. How are you?
Very well. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I have a lot more empathy here, and a lot, maybe a little bit better understanding of what was going on, only because I had a terrible mental health issue last year. I missed work for a couple of months. I'm on some of the same medications that Lindsay Clancy was on. And, you know, I've said this before, Kat. I come from a period working in radio 3 decades ago when I thought things like postpartum depression, or even depression in and of itself, was like, wait, what are you talking about? That sounds crazy. Well, I know that mental illness is a real thing, but this is really a complicated case, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, one can acknowledge that mental illness is a real thing. I believe it is. I believe that she suffered from postpartum depression and very likely postpartum psychosis. At the same time, she did kill her children. And confronting that is a very difficult thing, as evidenced by the fact that so many people have formed camps either to deny her culpability even for having committed the act with her own hands, or to deny her culpability insofar as they feel like she can't be held responsible because of her mental illness.
Yeah. And so, you know, I see even some people out there, even people I like and follow on social media, that say that she's a monster, you know, she's evil. And maybe that's the case. I'm not sitting there through all this testimony. But what I do know is that there's a fair amount of testimony on the part of experts and psychiatrists that indicate that she was, you know, over-medicated, that the doctors weren't, I think, taking care of her properly, that she was in this, I don't know if it was a psychotic episode, but there was certainly something dark that was happening that was clearly apparent with her. You've had the mother-in-law and her mother testify. Do you have a sense following this of how this jury might go?
I can't even imagine. I'm grateful I'm not on that jury. It's not a responsibility that I would want.
Right.
My sense is, you know, and you know, for those of us who are not being asked to make that call to determine whether Lindsay Clancy can be held responsible for what she did, all of the theorizing that everyone is doing, whether it's developing these kind of wacky alternate theories of the crime, saying that her husband actually killed the children, or whether they're saying, you know, I feel compassion for her because I too have struggled with mental health and I feel like that could have been me, you know, if things had gone badly, or the people who are saying that she's literally a demon. What everyone is engaged in basically is an attempt to make sense of something that is ultimately not a thing we can truly make sense of. At the end of the day, this is a mother who killed her children. It's an unspeakably terrible thing, and it boggles the mind. I don't think that there's really a version of events where we come around to feeling like, okay, it makes sense to me that this happened.
Yeah, and you even point out, and look, this is tough to even read this, and I'm sure it was tough to write this. You said there's so much we don't know, so much we can only imagine if we can bear to. I wonder, for instance, about the order of this. Did she kill Cora first, the oldest, knowing that a five-year-old was most likely to realize what was happening, to run, to fight back? I don't like thinking about this, but I can't stop thinking about this. And those are the things we probably won't maybe know the answers to those questions. And it's hard for me because while I have empathy and I've seen the medication, this was just such a horrific crime that how can you just overlook it, right?
Yeah, you know, and I make my living as a culture writer and also as a novelist, so I am used to inhabiting scenarios like this, building them from scratch, trying to put myself in the head of a person who does a terrible thing, which, as terrible as it is, they do it because it makes sense to them in the moment. And this is true of really any one of these crimes that shocks the conscience. The person who does these things, in the moment that they do them, whatever the reasons, it does make sense to them. It's a very hard thing to wrap one's head around. And I do think that it's very difficult for us to talk about. It's very difficult for us to look at it head on.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think you'd agree that no matter what happens here, there's going to be a large swath of people following this that will be disappointed.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that that just sort of speaks to the fact that a terrible thing has already happened. There is no outcome to this trial that's going to make anybody, even if they get what they ostensibly think they want, feel better about it. You know, there's really kind of no adequate avenue forward, no justice that can be really truly served here. You know, we can do our best, but I think it will never feel like enough, no matter what it is that happens.
I think you're right about that. I mean, my main, I think, focus the last couple of days when they issued the medication list and just talking, I had a psychiatrist and an expert on yesterday that was pretty good about this, and there just didn't seem to be, and I'm coming from a perspective where I've had a fair amount of psychiatric care and I trust my doctors and I felt good about that, but she seemed to be ping-ponging back with, you know, trying this and trying that, because doctors were telling her to do that. And, you know, that we know has bad side effects. All you have to do is listen to some of the commercials. But whether or not that is what happened here, and that's what was taking hold. The jury's going to have to decide. But, Kat, thanks for writing about this. You know I'm a fan. Thanks for coming on 97.1 FM Talk here in St. Louis.
Nice to chat with
you.
All
right, take care. One of the reasons that I espouse a conservative philosophy is because of fiscal sanity, of which we have none here in this country. And, you know, you really don't have it in state government or local government. It trickles down. They love to spend our money. And here's something that just cleared. Look, this was on CNN just a few minutes ago, and I certainly would take note. The United States now has a federal debt of $40 trillion. $40 trillion. It's a new record that we reached yesterday, according to the Treasury Department. Not something that we're proud of, right? And, you know, a lot of this is because of the amount of debt that we have. And, you know, you're looking at paying the interest on the debt, which is more than some of the other budget numbers. They say it was 20, okay, just match up the math here, $20 trillion less than 10 years ago. Trillion's a lot. Right?
Yes.
Trillion's a lot. We almost are. It's funny because I think we're almost desensitized to billions now.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Billions, that's nothing. We got billionaires out there. People have money. Companies have billions of dollars. So they're expecting that this to go to, it took 10 years, almost 10 years, to go from 20 to 40, right? How long will it take on our current path? How long will it be until we hit 50 trillion?
It will not be long.
They say probably half the time, 6 years.
Yeah. And neither party seems interested in taking care of this problem.
Thank you for bringing that up, Sue, because you're absolutely right about that. They don't really want to take it up because when you have to take up spending like this and then you have to talk about entitlement reform and everyone gets scared, the amount of posts that I see from people on Facebook that are worried about their Social Security and their Medicare. Let me just assure people for a moment, because there is no doubt that those are topics that should be and will be discussed in Washington moving forward. I mean, some of this is just simple math, Sue. People like you and I and Fred eventually here are going to retire, and there's going to be so many retirees compared to working people. The government's going to be on the hook for a lot of that because of Social Security, right? And younger people don't seem as interested in working. So where is the money going to come from? Well, we just go into debt further and further. I've always felt like there's going to be consequences for that. And the consequences would be, and this is why I tell people not to be worried about the Medicare and Social Security. If you're over the age of 50, now look, if you're under the age of 50, you are effed. Let me just tell you that right now. No, hopefully not. But if you're over the age of 50, I've been tracking this stuff for a long time, okay? And like I've even mentioned, there are people that are persona non grata who are true conservatives, I believe, that, you know, you can't even mention their names right now. And one of them is Paul Ryan. I got to know Paul when he was a first-term congressman in Wisconsin. I lived in Milwaukee. I remember having in-depth conversations with him during the first George Bush administration and probably into the second about Social Security reform. Okay, that's, you're talking about 30 years ago.
Yep.
At this point, certainly 26, 27 years ago. And that died at that point, and no one wants to talk about it because when you do it, and they did this to Paul Ryan, they say he's throwing granny off the cliff. So I bring this up because I want people to at least look at this stuff when you hear about it in a sane way. Again, to repeat, most of any of the serious proposals, if not all of them, have always dealt with people that are under 50.
Right.
They're not going to take, if you're like 60 years old, they're not going to take your Social Security away. The legislation's not going to do that, right? Mainly because they know that older people vote, too.
True.
So it's something that we've never gotten a hold of, and it happens locally. I mean, the amount of money, and we've talked about this, you know, you go back to COVID, for example, and there were a fair amount of us that were saying when they were sending out checks, whether it was the ARPA, American Rescue Plan, or the, the infrastructure bill, you know this is ripe for fraud. And what have we found? There's tons of fraud, billions and billions and billions of dollars, right? We throw away a lot of money, and, you know, you look at the federal budget, look, I'm a person, even though I'm a conservative, I'm a fiscal conservative and certainly lean libertarian, I'm always one that puts the Defense Department budget on the table because I think you have to look at how much you're spending in that area as well. Well, by the way, that's going to go up because we're going through our missile inventory relatively quickly.
Yes.
So the deficit numbers are increased because of the defense budget. Now, that's a constitutional responsibility. Protecting our country is a constitutional responsibility. Where you get out of whack is where you have all this other spending that, you know, people live on the government teat, if you will, Sue, and they depend on it. And a lot of Republicans depend on it, right? So you never really have a situation. I voted for Ronald Reagan in 1984, the first president that I supported. He was a fiscal conservative. But even if you go past 1988, there never really has been a point in our history in the last 40, 50 years where we haven't spent outrageous amounts of money. Now, toward the end of the the 90s, we got into a much better fiscal situation, mainly because tech was blowing up, computers were coming around, and I don't know exactly what happened with the budget, but we were able to, I don't think it was completely balanced, but the deficit under Bill Clinton and starting with George W. Bush was relatively under control. That is certainly not the case.
Nope.
Now, let me go back to what you said. This is part of the big problem, because Republicans will tell you that they want to reduce spending, and they're going to say that they reduce spending in certain areas, which is probably true when it comes to, you know, fiscal budgets year to year. But the problem is they all still have their pet projects, and the pet projects have to be siphoning money back to where they represent, whether it's a congressional district. Now, some of this is good. Like, we've got Boeing here in St. Louis. It's good for our economy. It's good for, hopefully, the nation's defense as well. But when you look at the numbers and you look at the way that these things have been inflated over the years, even let's go to California and their light rail project, which is just the biggest boondoggle that's maybe ever existed in this country. It's outrageous how much money they've spent on something that never might be completed. And a lot of that is federal tax dollars. So there's never a time where we can say, hey, well, and I had hopes that Trump was going to focus on this. We kicked off with DOGE, right? Everybody agreed, not everybody, the Democrats didn't care, but Republicans and people who supported President Trump agreed, we've got to get rid of the waste, fraud, and abuse first and foremost. And let's start slashing some of this stuff that's not necessary spending. Well, they did their best, but do you think we're in a better fiscal situation right now than we were when he took office? No, we're not, unfortunately. And that's frustrating, but I've almost given up hope when it comes to fiscal sanity.
I know.
Because they just love to spend money, and the legislature loves to spend money. In Missouri, they, you have agencies and departments and all kinds of things that are dependent on that money, and they don't want it going away anyway. That my frustration about fiscal spending is never going to go away. We're going to take a break here because we have, not only because we have the tournament, but the BMW Championship and a lot of folks heading out to Belrive Country Club means I want to find out what the forecast is going to be for the next few days. It was cloudy and rainy today. It rained just a little bit, but it was not uncomfortable. I'll tell you that with the temperatures. Dave Murray is going to join us after 4 with an update here as we head into the weekend. And Sue, even outside of what's happening at Belrive, I think the weekend forecast for St. Louis looks phenomenal.
Good.
For the end of August. So we'll take this weather any day. There's a guy by the name of Jim Epstein that I ran into here earlier. He's with a company called Clearly Better Sense, and they're literally, his company is literally scenting the PGA merch tent out of Belrive, because there is research that shows when things smell better that you stay longer.
That is 100% accurate.
And then maybe you spend more money, too.
Yes.
So I just had this conversation with Jim in the hallway, and I said, dude, we got to do this on the air because I found it so fascinating. And it's a local company that's been around for 10 years, and they do a lot of work with Four Seasons, etc. So real interesting. And I think you might get a History of the Lewis Suit content out of this, too.
Ooh.
No charge. No charge
on
this one this time. We're coming back.
Get more at 971talk.com.